This week on Blue 58, the Packers hit the practice field for OTAs. We name our favorite undrafted free agents and remember some miserable predictions we made before the 2016 season.
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the official podcast of thepowersweep.com. I'm your host, John Meerdink, joined today, as I am every week, by Gary Zilovy. How are we doing, Gary?
It's a great day to be great, John.
Great day to remind the folks that we are powered by WTMJ Mobile. So without further ado, let's dive right into the headlines, all of which you can find at thepowersweep.com. First and foremost, we're about to hit the second session of OTAs. They will be starting up the day this episode drops. Three takeaways, though, from last week's OTA session and kind of OTAs as a whole. First of all, I know we have to pretend like these are a super big deal because we are a Packers website and this is the closest thing that we're going to get to Packers football for quite some time, but really kind of temper your expectations here. I believe in the piece that I wrote on the Power Sweep, I said there's not going to be a lot of concrete takeaways from OTAs, but you kind of have to read between the lines a little bit and you can find some things. And the three I identified were that the state of the inside linebacker group is changing dramatically, probably for the worse if you're an inside linebacker. Second, the Packers are very reliant on their second-year or younger pass rushers. And thirdly, Ty Montgomery has turned into an absolute soundbite machine. We'll dive into those individually, but Gary, my question for you is, do you have any big lessons learned so far from OTAs?
You know, John, this is really when, from now until the end of the preseason, it's just going to be full of cliches and awful hope sounding best shape of his lives. Everybody's added pure muscle. Everybody's looking good. And as a fan, it's really easy to get caught up in that. In fact, I've been the conductor of some hype trains myself through the OTAs and training camps of years past.
And but, I think that's fine. You don't have to, let's not pretend like we're all Jets fans here in May. Like there's hope for everyone, or most people at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's a bad thing, like you said. And if there is a lesson to be gathered from these first OTAs, John, I think it's that the Packers are not as sold to the status quo as they have been in years past. It seems like there's been a really small but significant shift in the organizational's thinking. You know, they drafted a few more ready now prospects than in years past and have dipped their toes into free agency more than they have in the past. It's something that we've been talking about here over the offseason, but it just seems to be taking more shape as we see these players get on the field. Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy are evolving.
I think they are. And even the guys who aren't so much ready now or like custom made to play certain positions seem to be of a different class of athlete than guys we've seen before. I mean, just compare Demaryius Randall, the Packers' first-round pick in 2017, to Kevin King, the Packers' first pick in this draft. I mean, Randall was not a pure cornerback. There were concerns about how he would transition to the NFL at that particular position. There were some concerns about technique. And you see some of the same concerns about technique and about how he's going to translate to the NFL in Kevin King. The difference is that Kevin King is 4 inches taller, a tenth of a second faster in the 40-yard dash, and he can, you know, leap like a gazelle. He's an athletic marvel, and you just compare where he is to where Demaryius Randall was, and it seems completely different, way more plug and play, as you mentioned.
I agree. I think there's a lot to love about these new players that are on the Packers roster, and it's going to be an exciting few months to see just how they all start to fit together, and feels like we've got the start of a new era of the Packers.
It does seem like that, and that's something we referenced actually a lot last year, that back last big influx of players, of key players, really happened kind of from 2013 to 2014, and this seems like it could be another version of that. It's not just free agents and draft picks hitting the field for OTAs, though. We also have the annual crop of undrafted free agents, and the Packers really spoke kind of more in depth about their undrafted free agents this year than they have in years past, kind of coming out and saying that, you know, they have an athletic profile that they look for draft picks, but with these undrafted free agent players, they're really just looking for one key attribute for each of those signings. And we've tried to identify with a piece we've got up on the blog right now. Gary, do you have a undrafted free agent crush or one particular player that jumps out to you?
You know, John, I would say I root for stories. I really love reading and hearing about the adversity that these undrafted free agents make it, or that these undrafted free agents overcome to make it on the NFL, on an NFL roster. And one that I'll really be rooting for is linebacker Cody Hyman. He's one of the most agile linebackers Ted Thompson has ever brought in, probably next to A.J. Hawk from an athletic perspective. And what's really cool about Cody's story is he played eight-man football in high school. And in 2013 at Washburn, he played running back. And here he is. Some teams wanted to sign him as a fullback. Instead, he'll be lining up at inside linebacker for the Packers. And I'm really pulling for him to make this team. It'd be a lot of fun to see a guy who not too long ago was playing eight-man football, which is really only reserved for the tiniest.
Have you ever seen eight-man football played? If you haven't, it's really interesting to watch, especially on an outdoor field. I know they have arena football that's seven-man, but outdoor eight-man football is really, really interesting to watch. You should give it a look if you can.
Yeah, it's worth a YouTube search.
That is for sure. I have a couple guys, actually, that come to mind for me, and we can talk a little bit more in depth about undrafted free agent at a later date. But if you talk about unique physical gifts, there are two wide receivers that come to mind right away, and one offensive lineman, who I'll touch on after that. But as far as wide receivers, you've got two ends of the spectrum in Michael Clark and Monte Crockett. Clark is an absolute monster, 6'5 and a half, 215 pounds. He hasn't played football all that long. He even admits that he's pretty much a project player at this point. But that's a heck of a blank canvas at 6'5 and a half for the Packers coaching staff to work with. Monte Crockett, meanwhile, not quite as big, but he runs a low 4.25 in the 40-yard dash, which would be right up there with the fastest players to pass through the Green Bay Packers organization in quite some time. Don't know if he can play, but he can sure run fast. Finally, on the offensive line, we've talked a lot about him kind of behind the scenes, but I really like Jeff Gray coming down from Canada to try his hand at American football. Gary, Jason Spriggs is by far the most athletic offensive lineman the Packers have drafted in the Ted Thompson era, and Jeff Gray tests nearly as well as Spriggs did, despite being a little bit shorter and 10 to 15 pounds heavier than Jason Spriggs at the time that he tested. I think that's pretty impressive.
It sure is impressive, John. And I think what else is impressive about Gray is that he went, I believe it was seventh overall in the CFL draft. So despite teams knowing that he was going to be entering into training camp with the Packers, Canadian Football League team still wanted to sign up and have the rights to Gray. And that's an awfully high spot to take an offensive lineman. I really am looking forward to seeing him line up on the offensive line. And I know, John, that you're quite high on him, maybe even more so than some of the names that fans might expect to see on the depth chart at offensive line.
The Packers have tried to do a lot the last couple of years with guys who end up being called bad body guys at guard. Kyle Murphy is trying to make the jump from tackle to guard as maybe not the most athletic prospect in the world. Lane Taylor kind of falls into that category. Jeff Gray is the opposite end of the spectrum. He is an athlete who can play guard, and I'm pretty excited about that. Finally, Gary, you did some great work here looking back a little bit further down the line at some draft picks from 2013. This one kind of became a famous or infamous draft class this spring as Eddie Lacy and Daytone Jones and Micah Hyde headed for greener pastures elsewhere, leaving one player from the 2013 draft class all by his lonesome on the Packers roster. That'd be David Bakhtiari. Gary, what are your thoughts, I guess, on the 2013 class?
You know, John, if you're looking only at the Packers draft picks, and specifically after this free agent window, where only Bakhtiari remains on the roster, it's easy to feel pretty low about it. You know, Bakhtiari's the only guy, and first-round pick Daytone Jones never really met expectations. Here's the silver lining, though. You take a step back and you look at the rest of the league, the 2013 draft was probably the worst crop of players coming into the league in recent history. Get this, 6 of the first 10 picks are now playing for other teams just 4 years later, and the bottom half of the first round produced more Pro Bowlers than the top half. And just a quick note on Bakhtiari. There were 5 offensive linemen and offensive tackles specifically drafted in the first round, including 3 of the first 4 picks of the draft were offensive tackles. A total of 8 offensive tackles were all picked before Bakhtiari went to Green Bay in the 4th round. And Bakhtiari is the only Pro Bowler of the entire draft class and has been a plug-and-play left tackle for the Packers. If you could only get one player from a draft, if you're only going to hang on to one guy long-term, getting one of those decade-plus long left tackles is just about as good as you can hope
for. Well, here's the other thing, too. When you're a general manager, you want to make sure that you control a player for as long as he is an NFL-caliber player. So as long as he can be a high-level player, you want to be the one who's getting the most value out of him. And I think there's a good chance that most of these guys who went elsewhere are not going to be as good as they were in Green Bay. Eddie Lacy has had a lot of tread come off of his NFL tires over the past few seasons. The Packers got a lot of mileage out of him during the 4 years he was in Green Bay. I think the same can be said of Micah Hyde, who is never really going to be the kind of like game-changing safety, I think, that the Bills are trying to pay him to be. The Packers got him at his best, and maybe even Dayton Jones, who, although he didn't have great sack numbers, was consistently good in Bob McGinn's pressure ratings, you know, the hits and hurries and sacks all combined together. I think there's a good chance that the Packers did get the most value out of these picks, even if they didn't stay in Green Bay for the duration of their career. Here's one for you, Gary. I don't know if you're prepared for this. I don't want to go too off script for you. But if the Packers are doing it again in the first round, do you think they still pick Dayton Jones?
Boy, that's a really interesting question. You look at Jones and you go, yeah, was he necessarily a top draft pick for the Packers? Was he an absolute stud? No, he wasn't. The pick after him, Pro Bowler DeAndre Hopkins, a wide receiver, certainly would have loved to have him. Travis Frederick, the center for Wisconsin, went number 31, 5 picks after Jones. I think those are 2 guys you look at and you think, man, it would have been nice to have those. However, at the time when the Packers were picking in 2013, they really didn't need to spend a first rounder at wide receiver. And Frederick, the center at the time, was that was a very controversial pick. And the Cowboys were criticized for selecting a center that high in the draft. So I think they did about as well as they could hope for. You know, Jones, if he was one thing, was certainly available. Didn't struggle with injury all that much in his time with the Packers. And, you know, it's really easy to just continue to go down this list and go, well, I would have had this guy. I would have picked this guy. I would have picked Le'Veon Bell. Well, nobody was projecting Le'Veon Bell as a first right. round pick. So I think you probably end up with Jones. If you had to pick another one, maybe you pick the burly Wisconsin center, Travis Frederick, but that would have been a very controversial pick given the Packers, they were fine with Evan Dietrich Smith at center in 2013.
Especially with the way the 2012 season ended, they needed all kinds of help on defense. If you look at it and the guys who kind of went in that kind of neighborhood for a draft slot, he might have been the best available player for a 3-4 defense. You have to go pretty far down the list before you find another defensive lineman who really kind of did what they thought Jones would be able to do. I mean, the next couple defensive linemen off the board are Sylvester Williams at 28. Well, he's a defensive tackle. Kawan Short goes much later, but again, he's also a defensive tackle. And as good as he ended up being, it's hard to see the Packers investing a first-round pick into him when they already had B.J. Raji, still just a couple years removed from a Pro Bowl. So I think Jones remains a defensible pick, even if he didn't develop as the Packers were hoping he would. I think you made a really good point, Gary, and I'd be interested to hear you expand on it a little about going too far down the list when you kind of try to do the revisionist history thing.
John, I think it's really easy when you pull up, you know, the Wikipedia page for these drafts, and you look and you go, oh man, I wish I would have had this guy at this pick. We should have reached and picked him. In this, you know, it's what's really instructive to do in those is to look at how those prospects were graded. You know, Le'Veon Bell, Monte Ball, Eddie Lacy, those were guys that, sure, the mock drafts might have had them in the first round, but that was more for the clicks on the articles than it was actually maybe the scouts or the GM's perspectives, with all of those guys at running back going, you know, mid to late first round. You know, John, one of these times, just when you look at these drafts and how they break down, there's always going to be Pro Bowlers like Bakhtiari that are maybe overlooked and are taken later. It's just how the NFL works. There's too many teams. There's too many variables. Some of these guys are going to get picked later, and they wind up being really good players because it's the right scheme. It's the right player. It's the right coaching. It's the right timing. It just comes down to all the stars aligning and a little bit of luck.
Stars aligning and a little bit of luck. The next album from the Power Sweep. I think that'll be our first debut album. I like that a lot.
Right after our Bubba Franks cover
that
album.
That can be our EP, the Bubba Franks EP.
There you go.
That sounds pretty
there
good.
There you go.
For our folk band or whatever we are here at thepowersweep.com. Hey, we'll get to our main topic here in a second, but first I want to ask you to help us out. You, the listener, do a fantastic job already helping us out by just listening, by clicking on our articles, interacting with the things that we post, and that's great. We would like you to do one of four things for us, if you would be so kind. We have four ways for you to support the Power Sweep. Real easy, first and foremost, starting with just sharing the things that you read on the site. If you read something that you like, and we know that you are because you're liking with it or commenting on it on Facebook and Twitter, go ahead and share that. Make sure it gets in front of a few more eyes as well. If you like it, chances are someone else will benefit from it too. Secondly, be sure to sign up for our email newsletter. We have one email that goes out every week from the Power Sweep. We're not going to invade your inbox, and we're going to take good care of your email address if you trust us with it. It's really easy to sign up. You can do it today at thepowersweep.com. It's going to take you 5 or 10 seconds at most. Third, if you want to support us in a little bit more tangible sense, you can donate to our Patreon at patreon.com. We're going to ask you for $1 a month. That's going to help us offset some of the costs that it takes to keep this site up and running. We think it's worthwhile to keep the Power Sweep going in that way. Maybe you will too, and maybe you'll choose to support us that way as well. Finally, you can check us out at Spreadshirt.com as well. We have some great stuff on some t-shirts, some sweatshirts, and we're going to be moving in that direction a little bit more. Stay tuned for that in the near future as well. There's some good stuff on the way if you decide you actually want to support the Power Sweep by, I guess, literally wearing the colors. That would be a great way to do it. Most important thing that you can do, though, just keep reading, keep listening, keep interacting with us on our social media channels. That means a lot to me and Gary that you would do that at all and take the time to read what we're putting together at the Power Sweep. Truly, this has been successful beyond what we could have anticipated here less than a year into our grand experiment here. We are very thankful for the time that you've given us just reading these articles and listening to these podcasts so far, and we hope you will continue. On with the show. Gary, we're not big on predictions. We have made some bad ones. I guess that is the short way of introducing this particular segment. We're going to take a look back at some of our predictions we made for the 2016 season. Before we get too far, Gary, I just want to remind you, this is a safe space. We can embrace our badness with these predictions. So,
thank you for saying that, John. I feel safe, and I'm ready to lay down my poor predictions.
I can start. I'll open up here. My first terrible prediction was that Jared Aberderis would be cut, and so would Joe Thomas at the end of training camp. As you know, even though Jared Aberderis was cut much later, Joe Thomas was not, and in fact ended up starting much of the season at inside linebacker for the season. Gary, how bad do you rate this prediction?
I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 Ray Rhodes.
I think that's fair.
I say that because, John, I think you had an axe to grind on Jared Aberderis. I think I fell into this trap too. Last year, it felt like there were there were two kinds of fans. There were those that blindly felt Jared Aberderis was the Packers' leading receiver, and, you know, Jordy Nelson would only hold a candle to Jared Aberderis. And then, you know, there were those that realized that he was a limited wide receiver who struggled with some injuries and probably wasn't right for the Packers. They took a flyer on him. It didn't work. No harm. You just move on. Joe Thomas, though, that's an interesting one. I think Joe Thomas is a guy that everybody kind of keeps imagining, well, he'll be out of town. He'll make it out of, you know, he's not going to last much longer. And I think we're doing that a little bit this year too. So it's really interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how Thomas does, you know, given some stiffer competition at inside linebacker.
I would be so frustrated if I was Joe Thomas, because you see all this stuff online about the Packers need these smaller, faster linebackers like everybody else. And Joe Thomas is like, hey, I'm here.
I'm right here.
He has never weighed more than 230 pounds at most. I will never believe that he played at any weight bigger than that throughout his career. He has been undersized and doing a remarkable job, but I totally missed on him last year. And I guess to the Packers' credit, they did not. What about you, Gary? What's a bad prediction?
All right, John. Well, I'll be the first to admit that I was the conductor of the hype train. I was also selling tickets. I was the promoter. I was selling concessions. I was so in on Blake Martinez, a.k.a. Paul Blart Ball Cop, Paul Blartinez Ball Cop, being the defensive rookie of the year last year and being a game-changing linebacker for the Packers. John, how bad of a prediction was that?
I think you may have been looking at that one through some Stanford Cardinal colored glasses, because he did not really develop into much in the way of a defensive player of the year candidate or a rookie of the year candidate. I don't think he was ever seriously in the conversation, although I will give you a lot of credit. You rightly pointed out that Blake Martinez arguably had a better season, a much better season, than the object of many Packers fans' affections, Miles Jack. He did not have a great season last year, and Martinez, while unspectacular, probably outperformed him. So at least I'll give you some credit for that. But no.
Sounds like I'm getting 2 out of 5 Robert Fergusons.
I would say it's at least
one.
2, maybe 2.5 Robert Fergusons at best. So you ever want, this is an aside, but you ever want to get really, I guess, nostalgic for those old days, look at the age of guys like Robert Ferguson and Javon Walker sometime. They're not that much older than Jordy Nelson. In some alternate universe where they didn't have injuries and all the weird stuff happened to them, they could theoretically still be playing for the Packers. How's that for some weird stuff to think about?
The craziest one, John, that I'll just never get over is that Aaron Campman, the great Packers defensive lineman, is the same age as Julius Peppers.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I can't tell if I think that's older than I think he should be or younger than I think he should be.
I can't either, but one of those that, man, really makes you appreciate just how good Peppers has been for however many years he's been in the league.
I was really sad when Peppers signed with the Panthers. I understand why he did it. I wish he would have played another season in Green Bay just because it was fun to watch. But I am just astonished how he has been able to avoid injury. He barely misses a practice. Even when they give him a day off, it seems like an aberration. It's been incredible to see, and I'm glad that we got a chance to watch him for a couple of years here in Green Bay. We've got to do a joint prediction here, or a bad prediction, because in one article, both of us predicted, and I won't give away the percentages here, but both of us predicted that there was a non-zero chance that Mike McCarthy would be fired at some point during the 2016 season.
John, you're being a little generous here. You're giving me a nice out. I said a 60% chance that Mike McCarthy would be fired by the end of the 2016 season, and I'd like to apologize to Mike McCarthy, and I'd like to award myself the coveted Dan Devine bad prediction trophy. It's with great responsibility and great honor that I accept this trophy, and admit that I was a McCarthy hater heading into this year. And now I'm back firmly on the bandwagon, and I believe he is a highly successful NFL
coach. Now, let's be real here, though. It was not looking good there for a while for Mike McCarthy. If they don't run the table, do you think that prediction would have come true?
It's hard to say. You know, when you read the articles and the commentary after the fact, it looked like Mark Murphy and Ted Thompson were pretty content to stick with McCarthy despite the struggles the Packers had, though that's all with the benefit of hindsight of them actually running the table. It's hard to say. I think we'll only know that probably years from now when all parties have left the organization and we can kind of look back with it with some
context. To their credit, the Packers are never really an organization that's want to panic. So even if they had slid further down the standings, I'm not sure they'd have been fired before the end of the season. Although maybe if they'd stumbled in Philly, beat Houston, and then got plastered at home by the Seahawks, maybe there is a little bit of panic there.
Who knows?
Speaking of that Seahawks game, Gary, I will let you handle this prediction, which I, for a while, was a very firm believer. In fact, I would say I believed this prediction until about midway through the first quarter of the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, you know, this one hurts. This one hurts to admit, John, but I said on this podcast that if the Packers were to have beaten the Seattle Seahawks in the regular season, they would not only run the table, but they'd also run the table in the postseason and win the Super Bowl. So for this prediction, John, I'd like to get your rating on a scale of 0 to 5 Mike Sherman as general manager.
I give it 4 Mike Shermans as general managers, but one of those 4 is when he was getting in Warren Sapp's face after he injured Warren, or after he injured Chad Clifton.
Very good. Very good. I'll take that. I'll take that ruling. You are a kind and judicious grader.
I try to be a little bit on the generous side. Can't be super generous, but I do try to give out the generous grades every so often.
It sure felt like it, though. It felt like, you know, they had had some momentum and they were playing a hot Seattle team. The Packers really never having, you know, I think we're all a little scarred from those brutal losses against the Seahawks. And you felt like if there was a way that they could pull it off at Lambeau, win that game, they'd really would be in the driver's seat to win the division, to make the playoffs, potentially at that point, even a 2 seed, have a bye, despite their slow start to the season. There really wasn't another team in the NFC that I was scared of playing. And in hindsight, they were right underneath my nose as I live in Atlanta and the Atlanta Falcons. But what can you say? Sometimes you get the elevator and sometimes you get the shaft.
That is a good saying. And speaking of getting the shaft, while I've got you here, Gary, Cleveland Browns fans have gotten the shaft quite a few times over their relationship with the team. It's hard to enumerate all of them, but this one caught my eye in particular. The Packers drafted 3 running backs this year, which is unheard of, but not entirely rare. In fact, best I can tell, the Cleveland Browns are one of the most recent teams to ever make that same maneuver. In 2006, they took 3 backs, although one of them was a fullback, in the same draft. They drafted Jerome Harrison in the 5th round, fullback Lawrence Vickers in the 6th round, and Justin Hamilton in the 7th round. And if you guessed how many touchdowns they all scored together, if you guessed more than 7, you would be incorrect, because Jerome Harrison collected all 7 of those touchdowns in his 356 career carries. That is a pretty pathetic collection of draft picks from the 2006 draft for the Cleveland Browns, but we'll hope for better returns from the Packers' 3 draft picks at the running back position this year. Gary,
wow, that was pretty dark, John. You took me down a dark path there with the Browns.
There's a
draft.
Lot of interesting stuff about people drafting running backs. If you go back to the 80s, you'll find all the times teams drafting 3, 4 running backs in like 7 picks. It's like, what are you thinking? What is going on here? I'm doing a study right now on all the times the teams last picked 3 backs in a particular draft. It's just staggering to think of. If you let me go down a rabbit trail, do we have time for that, you think? Oh, I think we
can. You know what, John? We're there. We're
going to
do it.
So in 1990, I know this off the top of my head because I spend my time wisely. In 1990, the Arizona Cardinals drafted not one, not two, not three, but four ball carriers in one draft. A couple of them actually ended up being pretty good. Anthony Thompson, their second-round pick, not one of them. But Larry Centers, their fullback, ended up with 827 career receptions, which is pretty outstanding. They also drafted Johnny Johnson and running back Donnie Riley in the 12th round, who, best as I can tell, never played a single NFL snap. There is a bonus while I've got you here for that, and I think that should be about a show for this week before we bore the good people anymore.
Wow. You know, John, it's kind of like how in Madden when you're like, you know what, I need some running backs, but you're too bored to do the research on the draft, so you're just like, I'll pick these guys.
Larry Centers, that sounds good, right?
Yeah, that's all of those names sound like generic players that you're going to draft on Madden. Anyway,
Donnie
right?
Riley, of course.
Johnny Johnson is my favorite. Well, let me tell you, let the good people know where they can find us. You can find our podcast, Blue 58, on the Power Sweep. Thepowersweep.com is where we cover the Packers to help our readers become smarter Packer fans. We release a new episode of Blue 58, the podcast you've been listening to, every Wednesday. And our show notes are posted every Wednesday on thepowersweep.com with links to all the stories, stats, and nuggets we've discussed so far. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we'd love it if you give us a follow on Twitter and a like on Facebook. You can search The Power Sweep in both spots and you'd be all set. You can also check out the support tab on our website for a few of those quick ways that John talked about earlier to help spread the word about The Power Sweep too. And finally, we just want to thank you for your continued feedback, your continued support, your continued input on Blue 58 and The Power Sweep. It all, the good, the bad, the middle, the mediocre, it all helps John and I make Blue 58, the Power Sweep, better, and helps make all of us smarter Packer fans.
And smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. For Gary Zillevy, I am John Meerdink. We'll see you next week on the Power Sweep and Blue 58.